Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'll be interviewing Mercedes-Benz Trucks UK MD, Heiko Selzam. It's part of Commercial Motors' Grilled in the Caff series and was recorded over a fried breakfast in the busy Junction 23 truck stop, hence the background noise. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to stay abreast of everything that's happening in this industry, then why not subscribe to Commercial Motor Magazine weekly? For great deals, head over to www.com-mot.com. That's www.com-mot.com.
So, Heiko, thank you very much for joining me at the Junction 23 truck stop and agreeing to answer Commercial Motor reader questions.
Thank you.
And I've got to say, there's quite a lot for you.
Okay.
Some of them might be a bit challenging. I don't know. That's we'll see.
Yeah.
But let's start off with a nice, easy one.
Yeah.
When you were in school, what job did you want to do when you were older?
Good question. When I was in school, I was born and raised on a farm. Will and we were farmers, father's side, mother's side, winemaking, forestry. We had milk cows. And up to the age of 17, it was quite clear I want to become a farmer. That was my, you know, that was my passion. That was my calling. But I must say it was end of the 80s. And then farming became more challenging. Farming became more and more industrial.
Yeah.
And I think with our sort of business model, we were at crossroads, Will, whether we want to invest, especially really heavily invest into machinery equipment, or what do we do? And then we took the decision, my dad and I and my brother, we keep winemaking and we keep forestry, but we step out of farming. And we sold the milk cows, we rented out the farmland, and then my brother and I decided to go different ways. I joined the armed forces in 1990, then studied business administration, but then realized, I got my degree in international banking, financing, accounting. I want to go back to the CV industry. So to your question, when I was in school, I wanted to become a farmer, but I ended up as a trucker.
So tell me, what actually got you into this industry? Give us a potted CV, really.
Yeah. Due to my upbringing on a farm, I got in touch with commercial vehicles, with heavy machinery equipment at a young age. Once I started, I did an internship at that point in time, Daimler Benz. Yeah, and I did the internship at a nearby own retail outlet. And the sales director at that point in time basically offered me a job, and he said, once you finished your study, I want to have you in my team. And so that internship was 94, and in 96, I joined in April 96. Daimler Benz AG at that point in time as a sales executive for commercial vehicles. So the combination of that internship, but also the history, the heritage, and living and somehow working on a farm as a kid, as a teenager, that was my calling.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we always ask whether you have an HGV license, but I know the answer to that because you just turned up in... Yeah. Tell us what it was.
Yeah.
What did you turn up in?
Yeah. I turned up, in my opinion, with one of our game changers. It's the eActros. It's the E400, as a rigid chassis with a body on it and a steered rear axle. That's one of the first vehicles we have here in the UK. That's the first step into emission-free driving. So
Do you think it's important that someone in your position should have an HGV license?
I have my license, Will, since 1999, now since 24 years, and the license at that point in time was almost a bit of a qualification in order to get into the CV industry and to get into heavy haulage. And I personally believe it is important, because if you are not able to drive a heavy goods vehicle and you don't understand how it works and how it operates and what it means for a driver or for an operator, then I think you're missing part of the story. So yes, to your question, I think you should have one.
Okay. Now, you've been in the UK just over a year, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
How does the UK market differ from others you've experienced? Because you've certainly done the rounds, haven't you? You've been just
Definitely. Over the last 20 years, I was living and working abroad. I was in the Middle East, I was in Luxembourg, I was in Austria, and then now the UK. I think in comparison to the Middle East, although it's not such a fair comparison, the difference is that the industry over there is roughly 10 to 15 years behind in regards to emission standards, in regards to safety regulations, weight, dimensions. All these things are, to a certain degree, still not regulated. But they are catching up, and they are investing a lot in order to, you know, bring Middle East to the standards of Europe, which is good. I think a better comparison, Will, is the comparison maybe Austria, Luxembourg versus the UK. I think one thing is obvious. You know, obvious is axle configuration, grow combination, weight, direct vision standard. These are the things that are visible, or maybe, you know, trailers up to the height of 4.88 meters. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think what is really different for me is three things that stand out. Topic number one, the dominance of large players, large fleets, and the rental business. Topic
yes.
number one. Topic number two is the operator's license scheme, which basically creates a transparency. Well, you don't see in any other market because your potential customers and their volumes are known.
Yeah.
And last but not least, I think when it comes to vehicle, you know, financing solutions, integrated financing solutions, sophisticated financing solutions, the UK is advanced in comparison to the markets I've been before.
Okay,
yeah, three things: operator's license, financing solutions, large dominance of the key players that basically account to a large portion of the registrations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a good one. When you get ready for work in the morning, you no doubt look in the mirror.
Yeah.
How would you feel if someone replaced that mirror with a camera and a screen? I think you see where we're going with this one.
Yeah, I guess I see where this is going to. I grew up on a farm, as I told you. I love Mother Nature. I'm out quite often, and I love camping. So, you know, my boys, I must admit, taught me how to use my iPhone in selfie mode to turn it into a mirror, and I'm not kidding, in order to shave my head or to shave myself and without hurting me. So, but getting serious, I think when we launched Actros 5 and, you know, we came to the market in 2018 with the 7 core innovations, one of these core innovations was the mirror cam, yeah? And for me, you know, provided really something which is new, revolutionary, and, you know, provided enhanced safety, better aerodynamics, and subsequently, you know, lower CO2 emissions. I think with a mirror cam, we have a good combination. You know, we have the mirror cam that complements where necessary conventional mirrors. And we offer the opportunity for operators or for drivers that say, you know what, not for me, or maybe for my application, I rather prefer conventional mirrors, a good combination. Yeah? So you don't need to take it if you don't want it, or if you are, you know, preferring conventional mirrors, you could still delete it. But the take rate of 60% in the meantime of MiroCam, Actros and Arox, I think speaks for itself.
Is it in the UK, 60%?
It's in the UK, 60%, yeah.
But there's another couple of MiroCam questions here for you. This one says, my Actros has first generation MiroCam.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. Did Mercedes come to market too early?
Good question, I like it. Did we come too early? 1896, you know, we brought with Gottlieb Daimler the first truck onto the road, and everyone said, you know, it wouldn't fly, wouldn't work, wouldn't catch on. How wrong they was, frankly speaking. You know, even our German Chancellor Kaiser Wilhelm said, I believe in the horse. Yeah, the automobile is a fashion thing. Were we too early at that point in time? I don't think so. I think the risk you run, risk in quotation marks, as a, you know, as Mercedes-Benz, because we are a technological leader, you come to the market and people might say, you know what, it doesn't really meet my expectations, or maybe it's not according to my needs. But on the other side, should we then be afraid of change, honestly speaking? And as I, you know, said before, the current take rate of 60% speaks for itself. And when I look at the competition, Will, you know, there are already other competitors out in the market that have the mirror cam. And I personally believe the rest will follow. So I hope that answers that question.
Okay, yeah. Yes, it does. This guy here says, my boss says second generation MiroCam can't be retrofitted. Is this true, or is he just being tight?
The boss is true. You can't replace generation one with generation two. That is also partially down to the mirror arms. What you can do, and this is what I recommend to all, I would say, operators or drivers respectively, make sure that the software is always up to date, because over time we replaced or renewed or upgraded the software. So this is what you should do. But again, you can't replace generation one with generation two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this probably won't come as a surprise to you. We've had quite a few questions about spares availability.
Yeah.
And there's a few here I'm going to give you.
Fire off. Fine.
Right. When you go in to sort out your spares availability, waiting weeks for consumables is just not on. Earlier this year, I had vehicles off the road for between 2 and 3 months for regular maintenance issues, which is unsustainable.
And I agree. With the separation, Will, of Daimler and the Daimler Truck Organization and the Mercedes Passenger Car and Van Organization, I was one of the guys in the UK who said, I want to be the pilot mark for the separation of parts logistics, because I'm a firm believer that a dedicated parts parts logistics for Mercedes-Benz and Fuso trucks is key and brings us, you know, closer to our customers and improves the service levels. We opened our warehouse in January 2023, and at the same point in time, Will, we had to decouple our systems and our processes from Mercedes-Benz UK, Passcar and Van. Did that go according to plan? No, it didn't. We had hiccups in the process, in the warehouse management systems, and we had human error, which basically caused problems in the parts supply to dealers. The stock levels became low, and it led to a situation where we didn't, you know, serve our customers to the level they rightfully can expect. We did our homework in Q2, and I must say the team at MBT UK, but also on the dealer side, was working extremely hard to get the level to where it is right now, and that is on previous year level. Now we are back on track, but I admit and I agree, the first quarter in particular was significantly below the level customers rightfully demand and expect. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward now to the next phase. Well, now we have consolidated, and now we have that truck dedicated parts and logistics process in place. So we're moving on. But it's probably a step back we had to take in order to take two now forward.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a good answer. We've still got another couple of questions.
Sure,
This guy says here, I had a truck off the road for 2 weeks as the parts weren't available. However, TRP was able to source them for me. Please, can you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that relates to the previous question. First of all, you know, we had our issues in regards to the parts supply. It seems to me, and we found that out quite quickly, that I call it, you know, independent parts and service providers were faster and quicker to react, provided our customers with non-genuine parts through the aftermarket channel, but also probably found unconventional ways to source NB parts out of Europe and brought them into the market. Again, not good enough what we provided, the service level, but now I think we are on track, and that should not be the case any longer, or should be necessary any longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, we've got a few about the dealer network as well.
Yeah.
Someone's asked here, are you happy with the dealer network? You have an excellent product that's currently let down by poor after sales.
That's a bold statement, but am I happy with my network? First of all, Will, for me it's a partnering approach, and it's not about am I happy with the network, am I happy about the Mercedes-Benz truck performance in the UK, number one. When I look at my network, Will, I think we have a quite heterogeneous network in regards to size, service level we provide, truck focus, if I'm dead honest. And we need to rectify that. We need to look into that. I think the topic has and will be addressed in a short period of time. And I think one of the questions that come up next is, am I going to tackle it? Is that correct to say?
Yeah. Yes, it's exactly what we are going to ask you.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm tackling it. I definitely will tackle it. We have to, because, you know, service is key to our customers, and our customers rightfully demand a premium service for a premium truck. In October last year, Will, we sat together with the senior management of Mercedes-Benz Trucks and started our sort of journey to develop a Mercedes-Benz Trucks UK strategy with the support of headquarters, Region Europe and NBT UK. We spoke to customers, we spoke to drivers, we spoke to operators, we spoke to our dealers and we spoke to potential investors from bottom up, you know, what do you really need? And that was baked into a cohesive truck network strategy. That network strategy has been presented to the top of the house in April this year. It has been signed off and sanctioned. We informed our dealers and spoke to our dealers in June, and we are going to execute that strategy as of end of the year 2023.
Okay.
Along with the execution of that strategy, a newly appointed head of truck network, my network head of, will join me as of September the 1st. His name is Leonhard Niemann, and he will drive the implementation.
Great. Okay, good. And will that also tackle the Scottish dealer situation? Because that's the next question.
Yes, it will. Yes, okay. It will, definitely. In Scotland, now I need to go back. When I joined that organization back in June last year, one of the first actions I took was provide clarity in regards to our Scottish situation and how do we move on and what do I want and what do I expect in Scotland. Because Scotland is not only about Scotland. Scotland has an impact on the rest of our network because customers operating in the United Kingdom will demand service across the entire country. And a white spot has an impact even on a vehicle purchase down in the southeast or the southwest. So the existing dealer Western exited the relationship with us in June, and we appointed a new partner named Oil Truck in Scotland. Is that sufficient? No, but it's the first step, and there will be further investments in the network over the next couple of months and years.
Okay.
Yeah. But to the question, yes, we need to tackle it. It's at the moment an unsustainable situation.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there were some good honest answers there. Appreciate that. Let's move on now then.
Yeah.
Do you believe the UK's timetable for decarbonising the road transport industry is achievable?
I believe it is achievable by the year 2039 when all three factors come into play. Vehicle, infrastructure, and cost parity. The vehicles we have now on the road, the vehicles we handed over to our customers and the feedback we get, it's good. We take that feedback into account, but I believe, and that's what the customers say as well, the product is not the issue, Will. The product is not the problem. The problem is infrastructure and its cost parity. In regards to infrastructure, we deliver our own part in order to get a proper truck charging infrastructure in place on the roads. And you probably might have heard about, a joint venture we formed with Traton, MAN Scania, as well as Volvo.
Yes.
And formed a company named Mylans, who is, already putting the sort of charging points and charging stations in place. We start with a sort of charging corridor of 1,700 charging stations dedicated from the UK, mainland Europe, even down, to the southern part of Europe. So we are working on that as well, and we invested heavily, $500 million, in order to get that joint venture up and running. In regards to cost parity, that's for me an important one and probably one of the most crucial one. We will definitely do on the Mercedes-Benz and Daimler truck side our homework, Will, in order to get the costs down. We relentlessly work on reducing production costs, improve engineering, and then economies of scale will reduce the vehicle price. There are three factors which are a bit beyond my and out of my control. Factor number one, energy prices. Factor number two, potential toll regimes. And factor number three, subsidies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there, I would say it's down also to the regulatory body. It's down to the government in order, to support the journey to a decarbonized, road transport and heavy goods vehicles. One last topic, maybe not so crucial, but I think we need to look at our regulatory body, our framework when it comes to, I call it weight dimensions and probably also length dimensions, because that probably needs to be adjusted in order to achieve that target as well.
Yeah.
So the crucial transportation formula, and we need an adjustment, probably a renewal of that existing framework, weight and length. I hope that makes sense.
It does. So as the European transport industry decarbonizes, are we at risk of handing our truck manufacturing industry to China on a plate?
My personal opinion, well, I think the problem is bigger than just China. When I look into the world and when I look into and when I envisage emission-free driving, emission-free transport, I see four uncertainties. Uncertainty number one, what is the right technology path? Uncertainty number two, how fast will the markets ramp up? Uncertainty number three, how profitable are emission-free vehicles, zero emission? And number four, geopolitical instability. And I come back to the sort of China and the impact on truck manufacturers. When you look into the newspapers and when you switch on the TV, you realize there are trade tensions between the US and China, obviously.
Yeah.
There's a growing dependency of emerging markets on China. There's a race to build up technology know-how. There's protectionism. There is a potential risk of tariffs and maybe sourcing limitations for products out of China. And therefore, I think the answer is for me, well, as a manufacturer, we need to balance. I call it our supply chain and sourcing strategy. And we need to balance security and still remain competitive, number one. We need to look into either dual or multi-sourcing strategies. We need to look into diversified partnerships when it comes to different technologies. And I think our production network needs more flexibility.
Okay. So someone asks here, Volvo and Scania both produce truck batteries in Europe, yep. Whereas Daimler currently sources them from China. Are there plans to change this?
I must say that the statement made that we source them from China is partially correct. We have, well, a strategic relationship with CATL, CATL, but I can tell you for sure the truck I came up with today and the battery pack has been assembled in the factory in Mannheim, and Mannheim currently is our sort of inno lab and competence center for batteries, but also high voltage systems, produces or assembles and delivers the battery packs to the factory in Wörth. We also, you might have heard in May 2022, we announced, well, that we are going to diversify our sourcing strategy, and we teamed up with Manz, a German sort of, you know, high-tech company who is, you know, really class-leading in the automotive industry and when it comes to e-mobility. So, and I dare to say that probably our competitors are assembling, maybe, you know, but sourcing the cells from
cells.
China.
Yeah.
That's my view, yeah? So, yeah, and definitely the aim is, you know, that we develop, produce, and assemble future battery technology at Mannheim, and that's for Daimler Truck in total.
Okay, thank you. Are you concerned about the number of new players entering the industry at the moment, or do you think the established brands can fight them off?
Competition is good. Competition is healthy, Will. Competition keeps me on my toes. And I, of course, always look quite closely what the competitors are doing, because I think there's an opportunity to benchmark and to look at, you know, best practice examples. I think what I see when the competitors now come into the market, they are targeting niches. And I think we are already a quite well-established player, not only in niches, but across, you know, the entire sort of CV segment, starting at 3.5-ton light-duty truck and ending at 250-ton SLT. I think the main differentiator in future when it comes to emission-free driving is, do I have the right product with a load body? Do I provide spares, service, a telematics solution? Do I offer financing for the vehicle, for the body, as well as for the charging infrastructure? Do I come up maybe with a proper remarketing concept? And for me, important, what is my battery business model? And that means second life, reuse, recycling. And I think once you turn that into this sort of full line provider and you offer an entire ecosystem, including e-consulting, then I think then you are there. And that is the differentiator. And there I think we are quite well established. We have the right, I call it software, sales and service software. And so I think customers will continue sourcing Mercedes-Benz emission-free trucks from us. with that entire ecosystem.
Yeah. Right, this one, I think I know the answer. I think the answer is going to be October, but let's hear it from you. Yeah. When will Mercedes have an electric tractor unit with a sensible range?
We're going to have... first of all, I think the question is, what is a sensible range? Because a sensible range, in my personal opinion, depends on customer need.
Yeah.
The first tractor that we're going to bring onto the road is, you know, the series production, you know, that will have the E300 tractor. It's a sort of, you know, a city tractor based on the vehicle, you know, we basically see today.
Yes.
And that vehicle will go into series production already in autumn, and the range is 220 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah. The next truck or the next phase of tractor head coming into the market fully electric is the so-called eActros 600. And that eActros 600 start of communication will be in October, start of sales will be in October. The vehicle will be produced in December 24 and then shortly after will be in the market. Battery capacity, as the name says, 600 kilowatt hours and a sensible range to use that sort of question of 500 kilometers. The good thing is the vehicle has the opportunity for megawatt charging, provided you know you have a charging infrastructure in place, which enables to charge that tractor from 20% to 80% within 30 minutes, which means, you know, keeping in mind the driver and driving and resting times, that vehicle can not only be operated, could also be charged within a reasonable, you know, amount of time.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Should we be investing more in synthetic diesel?
The Mercedes-Benz technology path is clear. It's battery electric and it's hydrogen-based drives. My personal opinion, we shouldn't invest in e-fuels. E-fuels are, in my opinion, or synthetic fuels, are quite difficult to produce, topic number one, or expensive in production. They're not really energy efficient, if I'm dead honest. And when we burn them, they still produce, you know, carbon dioxide emissions, and that heats up the planet. So I would say, no, we shouldn't invest.
Okay. And you'll be pleased to know there's only one more question now.
No problem.
You have to put your thinking hat on for this one.
Yeah.
How long does the diesel engine have left, in your opinion?
I mean, we as Daimler, we are, you know, the largest manufacturer for commercial vehicles on that planet. And that means we also have a certain obligation to lead sustainable transport, Will. And I can say we are committed to deliver our part to achieve, you know, the targets set out in the Paris Climate Protocol. That means, and I talk about the triad markets, Europe, Japan, States, that by 2039, we stop selling or producing trucks with a conventional ICE unit with a diesel combustion engine. And that means we are quite clear and strict. That is the last day or the last year of production. There might be markets, will, you know, in overseas where we still, you know, will continue producing that engine. But for the core markets that account, you know, to a big portion of our sales volume, 2039, that's the clear end date. And I don't see that we will deviate from that target date. I hope that answers the question.
It does. It does. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.